And a good afternoon. We return here to the Manhattan Public Library at Points in Juliet. We are in the auditorium on the second level here with the League of Women Voters Annual Candidates Forum. So far, we have visited today and heard from the 8 city commission candidates that are vying for 3 positions. That election will take place on November 5th, as will the election for school board officials. So that is our purpose here today. The League of Women Voters annually sponsors this event, and News Radio KMAN is proud to be a participant in this, creating the live broadcast here at the Manhattan Public Library, and we have done this, probably 20, 25 years together or so. And the election process is a little bit different these days because of the timing of the elections. City commission and school board positions used to be on an April ballot, but that has been changed by state legislation, and that's this, I think, is the second time that we will have those two elections that will be held now in November, the first Tuesday of November, as is the general election for president, governors, U.S. senators and representatives, and other state officials. But the city and local school district positions are about as meaningful and as important and as impactful as any of those what may be conceived loftier positions, because these are decisions that are made locally. They are highly impactful locally in terms of what the issues may be, but they are also highly impactful in terms of the dollars that are spent. And these are very, very important positions. So earlier we had the forum with the 8 city commission candidates. Now there are 3 positions open for this particular election cycle that will be November 5th. The 2 top vote getters will get 4-year terms. The 3rd place candidate will receive a 2-year term. There is an item of succession that goes with this, and the rotation would be whoever is the first place vote getter would be the first out of those 3 to serve in the rotation as mayor, followed by the second place. The 2-year position candidate does not get an opportunity to serve as mayor. So those are some of the things with the Manhattan City Commission, and once again, the League Candidate Forum here that the League of Women Voters is sponsoring here this afternoon at the Manhattan Public Library is continuing. It looks as if right now I see 3 school board candidates, and I believe that there are 4 candidates in all and 3 positions available. And 2 of the candidates that are here today are incumbents, and we'll talk about that and let them introduce themselves here a little bit later on here once we get that particular process started, which will be in just a couple of moments. Now, there are some very important dates that with elections that you need to be aware of, and that is, 1 is being registered to vote. If you have changed your address, if you have changed your name, or if you have never voted before, you need to register or re-register. And you can do that at your county clerk's office. And there are a number of opportunities for you to register, but that's one that's fairly simple for you to go there and get yourself registered to vote. Advance voting will begin on the following day. The registration closes on October 15th, which is a Tuesday this year, and then advance voting begins at the Riley County Office Building at Courthouse Plaza, 110 Courthouse Plaza. Advance voting will be held Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the Courthouse Building, the Courthouse Office Building there, which is just candy corner from the Riley County Courthouse. For those of you that may not be familiar with that, advance voting will be held on the second floor. So the advance voting, once again, begins on Wednesday, October 16th, and will continue up till noon, November 4th. The advance voting, once again, you may cast your ballots, once again, Monday through Friday from 8 to 5, and then that Saturday, November 2nd, you may be able to cast your ballot in advance at the Riley County Courthouse Office Plaza from 8 to noon on that Saturday. And once again, You'll be able to cast your ballot on the Monday before Election Day, Monday the 4th, from 8 to noon as well. Now, we had a pretty full house here at the Manhattan Public Library. By the way, did I say Election Day is November 5th? That's important information to have. Anyway, we had quite a packed house here at the Manhattan Public Library in the auditorium for candidates for the Manhattan City Commission. And we've had a few that are taking breaks, grabbing some water here at the library, maybe utilizing facilities, and they'll be sauntering back in here, and we'll begin here in just a minute or so here at the public library. Once again, we'd also like to encourage our listeners here to tune in online if you happen to be, if it happens to make sense for you to do that, created that opportunity, and that's at newsradiokman.com. The League of Women Voters Candidates Forum will continue here on News Radio KMAN. And we do want to also give you an idea of some other things that are happening here today on KMAN. We got the Kansas City Chiefs in football tonight, and they play the Indianapolis Colts at Arrowhead Stadium. And that will begin at 6 o'clock with a 7 p.m. tip-off. We have a beautiful sunny day, but we're inside here with the League of Women Candidates Forum at the Manhattan Public Library, and soon to get underway with USD 383 school board candidates. Looks like we have one new candidate, Kristen Brighton, here, as well as two incumbents, Daryl Eady and Kurt Herman, that are joining us here out to the stage here in the Manhattan Public Library. The League of Women Voters with our candidates forum. Broadcast live here on KMAN and brought to you by the League of Women Voters. And now we just were given a one-minute warning by moderator Marissa Larson. So we certainly appreciate her assistance, and there have been several here with the organization that have been helpful in helping create this broadcast. And by the way, a big shout out to the Manhattan Public Library staff, because they have done a nice job in creating some new electronic connectivity for us so that we can give you a better signal here. And we certainly hope that that you can notice the difference and appreciate that. Getting underway shortly here at the Manhattan Public Library. And we are going to now begin our forum with USD 383 candidates and go back to the forum, the podium, with moderator Marissa Larson.
Thank you, Dave. So I want to welcome you all to the second part of our candidate forum. This we will hear from our USD 383 school board candidates. There are three candidates with us today. There are five candidates running for four open positions, so we will hear from three of those today. And again, I want to thank KMAN for airing this on the radio, and to our listeners out there, and for the audience for being here as well. This forum is hosted by the League of Women Voters of Manhattan and Riley County, AAUW, and KMAN Radio. So first off, we will introduce our I will let each of our candidates introduce themselves and give a two-minute opening statement.
I guess I get to go.
So, Kristen Brighton, you get to go first.
I'm Kristen Brighton. Thank you all for being here today, and to the League, and to AAUW, and the Public Library, and KMAN for all that they've done to make today work. I wear many hats in this community, and I believe it's because of all those hats that I am a great candidate for this position. First of all, I was born in Manhattan, Kansas. Not that many people really can say that. It seems like most people move here for love or money. I was actually born in Manhattan, went to Manhattan schools, graduated from Manhattan High School, went to K-State. Like many of the people I grew up with, I left town thinking that maybe I wanted to go find somewhere more exciting to live my life. Spent 4 years in the big city and realized, Manhattan's a pretty good place to grow up. So my husband and I moved back. He got a job at K-State. I started working for myself, was self-employed in the marketing communications world for several years. In 2006, I started my business, New Boston Creative Group, with two other co-owners. Now we have grown to a business that has 14 employees, and we work all across the state. Back to my hats. I am a product of Manhattan schools. I'm a parent. I have a sophomore and an eighth grader. I am an aunt. I have a nephew and a niece who are sixth graders and third graders at Bergman Elementary School. And I'm an employer. I've been very involved in the Chamber of Commerce and my role as a business owner in this community. I've been very involved in the Workforce Task Force in this community and looking at the upcoming shortages we're going to have and continuing growing crisis in our workforce. And that's been something I've been really focused on with this campaign. And I'm looking at it twofold. One, we need to look at how to make sure that our students are prepared for careers and graduate with the skills they need to be marketable to enter the job force. And secondly, I want to make sure that our district is a good employer, that we can recruit teachers and staff and keep people interested and joyful and enjoying their careers. So those are all the many hats, and I'll probably refer to them over the course of today. But I'm looking forward to talking with Daryl and Kurt and getting their perspectives and hearing all of your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen. Daryl Eddy, you're next.
Okay, first off, my name is Daryl Eddy. I want to thank the League of Women Voters for hosting this again today. It's one of our most enjoyable ones that we have, I think. My family has been here for a very long time. My father and his partner actually built the Dairy Queen on 3rd and Thurston Street back in 1956. So we've had business enterprises here ever since. My wife's family has actually been here since just after the Vietnam War, when her father was stationed out at Fort Riley and then retired here as a dermatologist and had a private practice here for ever since then. Well, except he retired a few years ago. And at the present time, I have a daughter that's a sophomore at the high school. My wife has been a para, a substitute teacher. She worked in early childhood development at one point. So we've been very involved within the district and within this community and the area as well. I actually grew up in Junction City. Yes, I'm a Blue Jay, sorry. My father there was on that board for 10 years at the school board. My sister was actually a school teacher over there for over 30 years. So we've been involved in education for a very long time. When I moved over here in 91, I actually worked for the Division of Continuing Education, Conferences and Non-Credit Programs, which is now called the Global Campus, I believe. Worked there for about 10 years. Worked at First Savings Bank for a few years, which is now Landmark Bank. I helped move off Florence Manufacturing, which is now Florence Manufacturing here. And for about 10 years, I was controller at Gary Community Hospital. So as you can tell, I've been for several years in finance and accounting, and that's the expertise I bring to the board, along with the background that we have in education. So I think that's about good for me.
Okay. Thank you, Daryl.
Very good. Just give me
time. Kurt Herman, your turn.
Well, the last time we had this, I spoke too much and thanked everybody too long. So thank you, everybody. I'll get right into it. My name is Kurt Herman. I'm a 58-year-old father of two boys who went through the Manhattan public school systems, kindergarten through high school. Married to my beautiful wife Becky for 33 years, and tell her I said that later if you see her. And always good to get that bonus. I graduated from Fort Hays State University. I was a double major in computer science and business administration. Both my parents were teachers. Mother was an elementary ed teacher. My dad was my high school principal. And yes, he did introduce him to the Board of Education. That's back in the days when you got SWATs, and I think that was the highlight of his career was swatting me my freshman year. So originally I got involved with the school district back in 1999 when we moved here to Manhattan. I always appreciate seeing my parents at the schools, and so I thought I would volunteer at the PTA, and pretty soon I was a PTA president and then start serving on site councils and then I finally decided to run for the school board, because I kind of thought, I went to lots of committees and I would sit out in the audience and it would seem like that a lot of things that I worked on would just be, thank you very much and we'll do this instead. So I thought I would get on the board. So I've been on the board for 12 years. I've been heavily involved with in many other activities that help us with that. I've been on the board of directors for the Kansas Association of School Boards for the last 7 years. And I represent 27 districts in the northeast part of Kansas in Topeka. It gives me a great view of what other districts are going through and kind of helps me bring back ideas and plans for our district. I've been awarded the KSB Level 2 achievement the last 10 years for over 100 hours of a professional development every year. 2 years ago, I was appointed by the State of Kansas Commissioner of Education to serve on a virtual charter advisory school advisory committee for the state of Kansas, and I'm out of time.
Thank you, Kurt.
But at the end, I'll throw that last part in there.
Okay. All right. So we're going to start with three questions from the league. And when we're done with those three questions, we will take questions from the audience. So audience, if you have questions, hopefully you have white cards. If not, hold up your hand and someone can bring one to you. Write your question on the card. Hold it up. Someone will come and gather it, and then they'll bring them to me for the second part of the audience questions. So first we'll start with the league question. The first one is, what do you see as the three greatest challenges facing USD 383? What would you propose in order to address these problems? Kristen, we'll let you go first.
Well, super. Well, I think we can't avoid the elephant in the room and the fact that we're in the very beginning stages of a $130 million bond issue with a lot of decisions and a lot of planning still to go, and that's going to be a huge part of the responsibility for the board over the next few years. But I have three other things I want to make sure that we do not lose sight of while we're so busy with all the elements that are going to be put into place as we're working on construction. As I mentioned in my introduction, I'm extremely concerned about workforce. As an employer, the district is one of the largest employers in the community, and it's getting to be more and more difficult to recruit people to fill in all of our positions, from teaching positions to bus drivers to lunchroom supervisors. And without enough people in those support roles, it just makes the stress on the teachers even worse. So we need to, as an employer, continue to look for ways to make the district a much more attractive place to work. And I'm sure it's going to end up being a combination of looking at salaries, looking at climate in their buildings, and looking for other, having dialogue with our staff to see what other changes need to be made in their responsibilities so that we can make sure that people want to remain in our buildings working for our district and helping our students to learn. The second is we're approaching these new buildings. With new buildings coming online, we're going to have to redistrict the entire community. And as I've heard many people say, redistricting is almost more stressful for the adults than for the children. Once they get moved, they're usually pretty happy. But so that we can have lower class sizes across the entire community, we're going to have to evaluate all of our schools to make sure they're equitable, to make sure we have a good mix of socioeconomic groups, and to try to preserve the idea of neighborhood schools as much as possible. And I'm out of time, but my third one is to make sure that our kids are prepared to go into work. Thanks.
Thank you, Kristen. Daryl, same question.
Well, first and foremost, our job is to make sure our students are prepared to go into the workforce. That means we have to diversify, make sure that we have CTE-type programs, which is career technical education. We have to make sure that those who want to go directly into it, whether it's programming or nursing or whatever, has some foundation in that, or whether they want to be a welder. You know, welders make pretty good money out there if you really look at it. But we also need to make sure that if they want to go to college, we can prepare them for that. So we need to make sure that those foundations are there. And then we also need to make sure that we have a diversified educational process, because not everybody learns the same. You know, that's one thing we've been looking at lately a lot, is how each kid learns. We need to make sure that we can connect with different kids and how they're doing it and what they're doing. Besides that, we need to look at the mental health of our kids. You know, they've gone through a lot of stresses. Families around the areas have gone through a lot of stresses. When you're looking at over 315 homeless kids within your school district, that's a lot. That's a stress itself. You can also see a lot of families have gone through deployment time after time after time. That's a stress on your kids. You know, and financial issues, the social economic, the wonderful phone and apps that are on there anymore, those create a lot of stress on your family. We need to deal with the mental illnesses of our kids and help give them strength and encouragement, and our teachers as well, because they're under a lot of stress, let me tell you. One of the other things, of course, is the bond, and we will deal with that at another point.
Thank you, Daryl. Kurt Herman.
Yeah, like the other two have said, right now the top thing we have is our construction projects. You know, we're just now in the design phase. Pretty soon we'll be breaking ground. We have to make sure that the students are safe during these construction projects, and we also have to kind of be careful that we do it. Then there's also noise levels, and they have to worry about. And one of the things we do is we've lengthened the school day slightly this year, and so we can end earlier in May, and then we'll start probably a week or two later in August. So it gives about a month further or a month more of construction without kids in the building, which is a lot easier for us. Secondly, would be the redistricting. I think the parents struggle with that more than the kids do. This would be the third time I've seen this since I've been on the board, so it's a very cautious and we actually use our maps from our transportation and it's kind of tricky because we have to maintain our Title I schools or we want to do it at all costs because we have five Title I schools and the children in Title I schools receive free lunches and free breakfast and reduced fees also. So this is particularly important. So sometimes we might grab an area of town with lower economic lower socioeconomic status and put those in a school. And sometimes people say, well, why didn't they go to the school closer? And but those are the reasons we do that. But there's millions of dollars at stake there if we don't maintain that. Thirdly is funding for special education. We have high population special needs kids, especially from Fort Riley, soldiers who want to come here and they request because of our special ed program. So got to make sure that's funded correctly.
Thank you, Kurt. All right, next question. I'm going to combine a few thoughts here. So Manhattan is a very diverse community, and how would USD 383 best recruit and retain diverse staff as well as provide an inclusive environment for the students? And I'm going to ask Daryl to answer first.
Okay. Well, as some of you may know, K-State has tried for years to create a diverse staffing at that location. They brought in coordinators and everything else to do that. We also have had trouble doing that, bring in minorities or just any diversity that we can within our teaching staff because it's helpful to our students. You know, we aren't all the exact same person out there. We need diversity within our students so they can understand how to work and deal with each other. So it is important that we try to strive and bring in teachers and others of diverse backgrounds. So to do that, we're going to have to do some unique recruiting. I thought once, because in healthcare when I was there, we actually went out and found high school kids that were considering it, and then we would, if they would come to our district or our hospital, we would pay a little bit of their tuition in order to have a commitment for 4 or 5 years. Something to think about. Some other ways to try and recruit and get them here. As far as the other diversities and issues within our schools, sometimes we go over the top, sometimes we don't do enough. But, you know, the best we can do is just try and maintain a sense of balance. Like Kurt said, we try and diversify our elementary schools and our other schools by neighborhoods within those schools. There are other different systems that we put together to do that. And I'm out of time again.
Thank you, Daryl. Kurt.
That's kind of the saved by the bell type of thing. Well, I think that is a problem that, I mean, it's been a topic ever since I've been on the board. For lack of a better term, resurrected the diversity committee. So a lot of our discussions are, how do we recruit minority teachers? Really the biggest challenge is, you know, I mean, we have a teacher factory right in our own backyard at K-State, and the percentage of minority teachers coming out of K-State are not that high. The challenge is right now we do not have one black teacher at our high school, and to try and get another one, you know, another black teacher to come here from another university would be a lot more difficult. I mean, but, you know, I think that recruiting at different colleges that have more minority teachers coming out would be the way to handle that. I think we are a welcoming district. There may be some misunderstandings on that because, you know, some people say, well, you don't let outsiders come into your school district. Well, we don't have the room right now. We're not the only school in this area either that does not allow out-of-district transfers. To make sure that we are a welcoming district and make sure we have new and updated facilities. We have equal opportunities for all staff and all students. We have a lot of professional development opportunities for our teachers. Having an approachable school board who supports a district is also very important. That's part of our job is to make it welcoming and that we listen to the staff.
Thank you. Kurt. Kristen.
Certainly, I think that it's been an ongoing goal and will continue to be a goal to try to have more people of color working at the district at both the administrative and the building levels. I had the opportunity on Friday to tour Northview Elementary and was very excited to see some African-American classroom teachers, a woman that was a teacher who came over as a trailing spouse of a university faculty member who was actually raised in another country, got her green card, got her teaching certificate, is now teaching. So I think we've got some bright spots in the district, but obviously we need to keep going. A couple weeks ago I was at another school and I ran into a veteran teacher who was a first-year teacher when I went to Manhattan High, and she pointed out that when she applied for her job, there were 350 applicants, and now we're lucky to get 5 applicants for a teaching job in this district. And so while we want to continue to try to get more diversity in our population, we also have to make sure that we have enough applicants in general. So the number one way to continue to build our diversity is to try to get more people of color to go into education as a career, both recruiting them at K-State, trying to help and support K-State's recruitment efforts, trying to recruit students who go to other types of universities. But then also we need to look at efforts to try to get other people to go into education later than life. K-State has a program right now that's geared towards non-traditional students, getting them to become teachers when they're farther along in their lives, when they're not 18, 19 years old. And I think that would be another great way to aim to try to get more people of color to move into teaching positions so that they can be great role models for our students. Students need to see people who represent all types of people, not just one, in their classrooms.
Thank you, Kristen. And again, I just want to remind the audience, because some people came in later, that today we have with us 3 of the 5 candidates running for the USD 383 school board, and that there are 4 open positions. So we are grateful and thankful that these 3 came to converse with us about their stances on issues. So for the last question from the league, what do you see as the school district's responsibility to support the mental health of students and staff? And what do you see as the strengths of the current programs, or what would you change in areas you see as unsatisfactory? And Kurt, I'm going to let you go first this time.
Well, that's a great question. Well, I think, you know, first of all, we need to have the staff. We need to have counselors at all levels and at every school. During the last round of budget cuts 5 or 6 years ago, I mean, that was kind of the low hanging fruit at the time. So we had counselors and that were going, and social workers that were going between buildings. So I think we've been able to hire those positions back. So the resources are available for the kids. We also have a partnership with the Pawnee Mental Health that we just signed or just agreed to for our staff also for resources and help if they need some assistance there. excuse me. I think the weakness is that we really didn't have a mental health program for our employees until recently. So I think that we've made some great strides recently with this new program with Pawnee Mental but it's not just staff too. I mean, it's for kids. I mean, with all the school violence and that you hear about, and a lot of times it's, I mean, even anti-bullying programs is a piece of that also, and I think we're doing pretty well at that, but there's always room for improvement.
Thank you, Kurt. Kristen.
So I had a teacher focus group over the summer, and I asked them if the board could provide anything else to you, what resource would be the number one thing you would ask for? And it was across the board, they all said more social workers. I visited now a few of the schools, and the principals are on the same page, more social workers, more guidance counselors. They said that the problems that have all the changes going on in society, all of the effects of smartphone use and increased social media use and increased media consumption, we can go into it ad nauseum of changes in the home. But all those issues are bleeding into our classrooms. I've had 4th grade teachers tell me that there have been weeks they've done more than one suicide report. These are issues that if they're not taken care of, they're getting in the way of learning. And they're unfortunately occupying so much of teachers' times that it's keeping the teachers away from what they're hired to do. So as a district, we're going to have to continue to look for ways to expand mental health services. I've been very excited at 2 new programs the board has adopted this year, and I want to watch them very closely to make sure that they're having the intended effect and that our teachers and our students are getting access to increased mental health, because teacher burnout is becoming a very, very severe issue, and anxiety and depression related to the stress of their jobs, which again ties to keeping them in the workforce. But lastly, I think as a district, we need to make sure that we talk about self-care. and looking for things that we can do in our day to help students learn to self-regulate their own stress levels, whether it's taking time to just breathe, a few maybe extra minutes to go walk around the building. It may seem really kind of hokey, but even trying to integrate more things like yoga, art therapy, things like that to try to help students start to learn self-coping mechanisms that maybe we can try to look at things from both ends of the spectrum.
Okay. Thank you, Kristen. All right, now we are going on to questions from the audience. So just to remind you, sorry, Daryl, I am so sorry.
I mean, I'm going to
ahead of myself.
What they said, but
no, I am so sorry, Daryl Eady.
Okay, you know, how do you educate somebody if they're having mental issues, or if they're having, or if they're starving, or any other conditions that are going on, or physical issues that are going on, and you don't address those first and foremost? You know, so some of the conditions we have put together, the multi-tier system of success program or system of support program we put together, will be helpful in tracking kids from kindergarten all up. You know, so we can see if there's something that clicks or goes wrong, or, you know, try and help in that area. The work we have with Pawnee Mental Health, the two programs we have set with them this year, are great for our teachers and our students to see when things are happening, how we can help them, and what's going on. Those are key to the mental health of our students. Somebody was talking about PE. Maybe we need more PE classes to help work out the stresses of our kids. There are many other issues that, you know, there was a high school in California that's actually asking everybody to take away their cell phones for the entire day. Very interesting concept, and this is in California. But these create a big stress level. So, you know, it's very interesting. You know, everybody's talked about Facebook, or now it's Snapchat more than anything. And we've actually had an arrest because of Snapchat this year. And we've also had a suicide last year. Something I hate seeing or hearing of any of our students right now. So, it is a battle.
Thank you, Daryl. Okay, now we are going on to the questions from the audience. So again, I want to remind you, if you have a question, please write it down on the card, hold it up, someone will come and get it from you. So the first question is, what is the role of the arts in schools, and how important is the implementation of arts education? Kristen Brighton.
I'm a big supporter of the arts. I'm on the board at the Manhattan Arts Center. My children are very involved in the arts. I believe the arts have done a great service to my own children in helping them build their confidence and self-esteem. I want to make sure that we have as much access to the arts as we have of any other type of discipline, whether we're talking about visual arts that allow children to explore what they can create with their own hands, or whether it's dramatic arts that allow them to try on different roles and to help to get compassion and empathy for other people, whether it's performing arts and music, which has been proven to help them get their brain built in the correct way to help them succeed in math and science. I think that there's been plenty of research that show that the arts pay back in spades for whatever we invest in them. I'm very proud of the fact that Manhattan High School actually has more students in arts programs than in other programs. Not that there's absolutely anything wrong with athletics, but I thought that was pretty cool. I still think it's really cool when you go to a Manhattan High School football game and there's more kids in the marching band than there are when you combine all the kids that run out in their football pads and jerseys. I think it's great. We need to ensure that we have well-rounded activities for our students. And I think the arts have been proven to help students be successful regardless of what career path they'd be in. So you'd be hard-pressed to get me to cut arts programs if we were ever having to look at budget cuts in the future.
Thank you, Kristen. Daryl Eady.
Well, first and foremost, I mean, there's been a lot of correlation between music and math. So cutting arts program could be very harmful. My family's had a long history. You know, I played the piano, the trumpet, and several other things as a kid. Wife was lead in Sound of Music at the high school here. I'd get killed if I went home and said we were going to cut the arts. Daughter is huge into dance. So I obviously believe that there's a huge correlation between being able to, correlate your time, get your time management going with all your outside curricular activities, which is arts and sports and others, and being able to use that in your school activities. It's also a great stress reliever. You know, if you go out and play the piano or do a portrait or even go out and do photography, there's great ways that that creativity is great for your mind. So I am very supportive of the art programs just because it really develops and encourages your mind and gets it moving and going. Writing is also another art that I think is something we really need to encourage.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. Kurt, Herman, same question.
Great answers. I can add a little bit to that, but I'm a very big supporter of the arts programs, and like Kristen said, about almost 800 of our students are in some type of an arts program, and that's roughly almost half of our high school population. But you know, it's everything from band to chorus to, I mean, even culinary arts is considered part of the arts. There's some schools and some other districts that they actually have an in-school restaurant, and like once a week on Wednesday nights, you have to order online, and then you come in and they make meals for the community. And those programs are self-funding, and that's a career technical education, a CTE that we've referred to. So that's something I'd like to see us work towards. Also, I would also like to see more, right? You know, we have STEM programs at science, technology, engineering, and math, but it should be STEAM, and we should add arts in there because we have a STEM program at K-State every summer. It's federally funded. Well, it will be soon. I shouldn't let the cat out of the bag, but anyway, but it'll be federally funded, but we don't really offer arts at that time, so I think that would be something we could add, that's a full program. It's actually a waiting list, so I think if we added something arts in there, that would actually enrich that program as well.
Okay. Thank you, Kurt. Next question. With all the renovations and buildings taking place for the school district, what is your strategic plan for maintaining these buildings better so that we don't find ourselves in the same position down the road? And Daryl, I'm going to let you go first.
Well, first, it starts in the planning phases. When you're building the building itself, you have to make sure that they're designed so you can maintain them. You don't just throw in a bunch of glitzy stuff and tons of carpeting and stuff that makes it difficult to clean. So you have to make sure, you know, you have tiles and different bricks and different items or structure to make sure they're easy to maintain and easy to clean. Even the auto flushers and all that type stuff that you have to put in. The other part of that is you have to make sure that they support your special needs kids at the same time. And you have to be able to clean all that as well and put washers and dryers and showers within your schools. It's very important. In fact, one of the reasons I ran the first time is because the $99 million bond issue we had, 80% of that was for maintenance of our buildings. I want to make sure we maintain them because it's a lot cheaper if you maintain them and keep them going to start with than it is to come in on the backside and have to fix them. And we weren't able to do near as much as we should have done even then. Kudos to the board at that time for doing what they could. But it is very important that we have easy buildings to maintain and that we continue on maintaining what we have and keep them up to speed for the safety of our students and for the wellness of our buildings.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. Kurt Herman.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, the schools with carpets in them are gone. I don't know if you've been up, you know, if you've been up to high school since our last renovation, it's all stained concrete. So it's a lot easier to clean and maintain. And we should, years ago when, yeah, you're right, the $97 million bond issue, over half of that was for maintenance and for updating and removal of asbestos but that was also a part of deferred maintenance because we were strapped by the state and they were cut, you know, we lost money from the state for quite a few years, and we did a remarkable job of protecting the classroom as much as we could, but we were limited on what we could do as far as putting money back to replace a roof here and there. So things have gotten a little better. I mean, I think we still need to be a little cautious with jumping for joy that we have more money coming in from the state because we're just an election away from that all changing. So I think we still need to, move forward and protect the classroom as much as we can, but I still think we need to be cautious. But we have been putting aside, for example, we used to pay $40,000 a year to maintain Bishop, the Lou Lane field. That was fertilizer, mowing, painting, And we've been putting that money away for about the last 10 years, and it costs about $500,000 to replace turf, and it's almost due for that. So we have the money for that because of the savings from putting the turf in.
Thank you, Kurt. Kristen Brighton.
It's been my sense that the board learned a lot with the 2008 bond issue about deferred maintenance. And I've heard a lot of stories like the one Kurt just told about planning ahead and putting so much money away over 10 years so that we'd be better prepared. I know that when the Chamber Board was asked to endorse the 2008 bond issue, they came out and said, we'll endorse it, but we want to make sure that we see the school district doing a better job of keeping up with this. So I know a lot of people in the community are really watching for it. I know I'll learn a lot sitting on the board, as these two gentlemen have over the last few years, but I do think that it's keeping that, hopefully, that crystal ball in front of us so we can stay a couple steps ahead of the community and we can look at how the community is growing, where our needs are going to be. We have to keep in mind that we've got some fairly new schools, and we've got three schools downtown that are all over 100 years old, and while we've put a lot of money into them, eventually at some point we may have to make a choice what to do with those older buildings. It's just going to be an ongoing struggle that the community is going to have to stay on top of, and we're going to have to be in a cycle of every so many years assessing our building and our facilities and our growth and deciding what to do next to stay on top of things.
Okay, thank you, Kristen. All right, next question, and let me see. I start with Kurt this time. Okay. Kurt Herman. What do you think are the top three competencies of a career-prepared student?
Well, that's a really good question, and it depends on who you ask. You know, there's the Kansas CAN. That was initiated by the State Department of Education, not Kansas State, but the State Department of Ed. And they went around and talked to employers across the state. And I know somebody sitting in the audience will have a recollection of this. But some companies are asking, you know, somebody shows up on time. Knows how to interact socially with other workers and pass a drug test. I think that's very generic, but that was one of the things that came out of this statewide study. However, I think it's much higher than that. I mean, you know, for the career technical education, have them, you know, we should offer programs through the high school. And we do that now, like for welding certifications, as Daryl mentioned earlier. You can get two certifications through technical college, and the high school pays for that. And you can start out like $60,000 a year right out of high school. So I think there's those competencies and just teaching the students so they can at least be ready to interact in the workforce, I guess. Kind of a tough question.
Okay. Thank you, Kurt. Kristen.
All the research shows that now the most important thing a child can graduate from high school with is some sort of real-world marketable skill. Beyond just the finishing the 21 to 24 credits that they earn in high school, that they have had some sort of real-world experience, whether it's an internship or a job shadowing or a part-time job in the summer, but some opportunity to actually be in a workplace, working around other people who are getting paid for what they do, whether or not the student is. And having that opportunity so that when they actually create a resume, they have something to put on it other than their classwork, that they have something that they've had pride in that they've actually hopefully have even been paid for the opportunity to do. So I'd like to see our district move forward to what a lot of other school districts are starting to do with looking at building career academies, looking at having internships and job shadowing programs. And I think there's a lot of opportunities for partnerships between the school district and the business community to get those started. And then certainly we've come so far over the past 10 years since what was SB 155, I think now that's like a marijuana law or something, but these dual credit programs that allow students to get real academic credit in school. All these things are moving us in that direction. So continuing to help students think more about careers before they ever even start college. It's amazing to me how many college students I talk to who are juniors and seniors, and they still don't have any idea what they want to do with their lives. And we have got to get to the position, when you look at how expensive a four-year college is, that more students who go to college have a clear path in mind of what they want to do. And that begins with career exploration at a younger age, starting as early as grade school.
Okay, thank you, Kristen. And Daryl Eady.
Well, actually, what Kurt was talking about earlier, there was a gap in there for a while when getting somebody to show up on time for work actually put their effort into their job and then leave when the job was done was difficult to find. Things are changing a little bit, and I'd like to see that continue on. Also, when a person graduates high school, they also need to be able to either prepare to go on to college for their education, go into military, or be ready to go out and actually start a job. That means whether it's keyboarding or it's nursing or it's any of the others options out there, welding, like we've talked about before, those are critical. To be able to walk out that door, go in for a couple weeks, and start a job, it's just phenomenal for some of our kids to be able to do that, even in automotive and some of the, in other industries. I don't know about you, but I don't even want to touch a car these days, and I used to play with it a lot. And we are doing a lot of that within our high school. We have a lot more to go. And, you know, with the culinary that he was talking about earlier, Kurt was, there are just a lot more spaces we can actually work towards and make even better. And, I mean, that's our goal. That's what we're responsible for doing, is getting him ready to move out there and do that.
Okay. Thank you, Daryl Eady. All right, we have our last question. There were a lot of good questions from the audience, and but we don't have time to ask them all, so this is our final question. And I will start with Kristen Brighton first. But the question is, how would you define an equitable education? What strategy should USD 383 employ to ensure students receive an equitable education regardless of their background?
Well, certainly in its very definition, equitable education means trying to ensure that everybody has the same opportunities from the moment they walk in the door. And while certainly every child's home background doesn't put them in the exact same situation the day they walk in the door, it's the role of the district to do their best to try to level the playing field. I know that in this community, it's an ongoing discussion to make sure that every single elementary school has an equitable situation. We have some Title I schools that have a lot more grant money and funding, and sometimes they have more whiz-bang technology and more resources for helpers than maybe some other parts of the community, which maybe have higher socioeconomic status, and the hope is that they can be leveling each other out. As a board, that's certainly something that the board members have to take into consideration if every decision that they make, and it's certainly the core of the board's responsibility to do. I guess my hope is that the community, the parents, the staff are the eyes and ears of the board and help to report opportunities to improve equity in the community, and so that we can continue to make sure that every student gets the same opportunity to learn as others.
Thank you, Kristen. Daryl Eady.
Well, right now we've been talking about that a lot with our new school, because you want to put in all the bells and whistles when you build a brand new school. Well, but then you have the older schools out here that don't have all the bells and whistles, and you need to make sure that everything's balanced across the district. You also have issues of the Title I schools have a poor PTO, other things, but you can use those Title I funds to actually buy the things that those other wealthier schools can buy on their own. And we try to balance it a lot with that, just for the tools, basically, to give the students. But there is it is very difficult to balance that between a school that has 180 students to one that has 512. There's a lot of different options out there for those different schools. And to balance that out, you know, it's not easy, but we have been working on it. We've been doing it. I'm sure we aren't perfect with it, but we try to do the best we can, giving the teachers and the students the tools across the board of equal value and equal abilities. You know, like right now, we have some schools that have their music room or their art room on carts. At one point, right after the end of the bond, they have their own rooms. Some still have their own room, some don't. We need to get them all back to their own rooms. And these are things we need to work on and continue to work on as a district.
Thank you, Daryl. Kurt Herman.
Great answers, both of you guys. I think, you know, it is facilities, but I also think it's programs. I think, you know, making sure that we have early childhood education for all kids, including parents as teachers, early Head Start, state-funded preschool. Evaluate the needs for, we need to make sure we take care of high-risk students, you know, foster children, kids with trauma, homeless, in crisis or in mental health issues. Make sure we have enough school counselors and social workers. I think another thing that's important is, you know, I think we're I don't know if we're unique, but I think we're one of the most innovative schools as far as we added a non-discrimination policy for staff and students. And we also added that transgender policy to, because I think all kids deserve to be protected and feel safe and in the school environment. So I think it's the programs as well as the buildings, like they've both said, that it's not just they all have the exact same access to pencils, but I think having the support staff and because that's where our heroes really are. It's the teachers and our staff out in the schools.
Thank you, Kurt. Mm-hmm. All right, now it's time for our closing statements. Each candidate will get 2 minutes for their closing statement. And I'm going to start in the middle. Daryl, Edie, you get to go first with your closing statement.
Wow, okay. Well, first off, it's been my privilege to serve you for the last 8+ years on the in the district. And hopefully I have been serving you, not me, but you. You're the ones who vote for us, put us in. I truly believe we need to listen to what you have to say and work the best we can within our schools and with all the parameters we have. There are also things that we do know that you unfortunately don't know, that sometimes we have to work out and vote on and discuss. Transparency is important, and we try to be as transparent as we can to everybody. I've told you that, my family has been in education for a number of years, and we support it. We think it's one of the strongest economic development processes there are within the government, and it's the best place to put your money. So that's where we've been putting it. That's where we've been putting our time and our efforts and our strengths. And I would just appreciate everybody's vote. These two have been great to work with. Kurt has been on it for almost 12, and he's been great. And Dave back there is almost 16 years. Kudos to him. So appreciate all the knowledge they have brought and given to us and helped us out with for all the years I've been there. So thank you.
Thank you, Daryl, Edie. Kurt Herman, closing statements.
Well, since I didn't get to finish my opening,
he's gonna plot
I got notes. More stuff. No, one of the things that I've done, though, that I'm particularly proud of is I'm one of the founders of the KELI, which is a Kansas Educational Leadership Institute. It's with K-State, and it's a mentorship program for new superintendents. And now it's actually got some legislation passed that that's actually required for a new superintendent to get their license. So I helped begin implement that program. It's been very successful. Recently, I'm a graduate of Fort Hays State University, as I mentioned earlier, but I've been nominated for the Alumni Achievement Award. So hopefully I can get that next year when they make the final decision. I guess nominating is just is enough. But really, I've been advocating for kids for this district for 20 years. And I believe that a school board is a team. And like Daryl said, and I think all three of us are great candidates. Kristen's would be an awesome board member as well. And so Daryl would be great to continue. I don't think I'm biting the hand that feeds me. But we've also had Dave Colburn that's been on our board 16 years, and he's here. And I'm still going to I'm going to point him out. But Dave's been a great mentor to me, and he's been very helpful to get us to where we are today. So I'd like to continue with that. But my efforts as a board member will always be for all children, no matter who they are or what their background may be. But I will always support the kids and the staff. Again, like I said, they're why we're successful. We provide the resources, but without the teachers and the staff, we would never be where we are.
Thank you, Kurt Herman. Kristen Brighton.
Thanks again for everyone for being here, for the league and AAUW and K-Man for putting this event on. I just want to end with saying I believe in public education. I believe public education is what's made America great. But I think there's a lot of work to be done to keep it on track, to keep it as high quality as all of us received when we were children. I see a lot of opportunities for change, and I'm someone who doesn't want to just be a complainer. I want to be someone actively involved in helping to solve the problems. I feel like through this campaign, because there aren't eight of us sitting up here, because it's a smaller group, I feel like I've wanted the whole candidate experience. And so I've really been trying to do my homework. Even before I filed, I sat down with all of the current board members individually, with past superintendents, with teachers, with people who were my teachers when I was in school. And I just really have come to this with the idea of wanting to be a critical thinker and asking questions and listening. And it's something I want to take along with me as a member of the board. I want people to feel comfortable to come to me with new ideas, and Lord knows I'm going to come up with some crazy ones. They're going to roll their eyes with, roll their eyes out, and you know, some of them won't stick, and some of them will. But I have learned in my adult life that sometimes crazy ideas can really change lives, and I've helped to start several programs in the community. And through hard work and dedication and getting people to work together, I feel like I've been able to achieve a lot. So I thank you all for being here. I hope that I earn your vote on November 5th, and that we can continue to work together to make Manhattan a greater place. Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen Brighton. And thank you all for coming, and thank our candidates for coming and sharing their positions on the various issues that are important to us. And thank you, audience. Thank you to the League of Women Voters of Manhattan-Riley County, AAUW, and KMAN for hosting and sponsoring this event. And if you have questions or want to find out more about positions, again, I remind you that the website vote411.org has information, and you can also check out the League's website as well for more information. Thank you very much.
And that about puts a wrap up on activities here at the Manhattan Public Library today, as the League of Women